Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
Stunning new developments on the missing jumbo jet. These details first reported by ABC News. Someone who knew what they were doing turned off two key tracking devices in the cockpit, one at 1:07 a.m., the other at 1:21 a.m. That's a 14-minute gap, cutting off contact with the plane. And what this gap suggests is there was no catastrophic failure. It was a deliberate act done by someone taking over this plane.
And what it also says is that those extra 4 hours after that last contact mean that the plane could have flown anywhere for thousands of miles. This American ship now leading a search in the Indian Ocean west of Malaysia.
And David Curley is here today with all this brand new information. Good morning, David.
Good morning, George. This is a massive expansion of this search area. If you look at the map, 4 hours at 600 miles an hour, you're talking about a 2,400-mile area that now could be considered part of the search zone. But we have also learned from U.S. sources that they believe some of the communication systems, as you mentioned, were intentionally turned off at different times, meaning this was not a catastrophic failure.
ABC News has learned that those two separate key moves in the cockpit may be crucial to solving the mystery. Just 26 minutes into the flight at 1:07 a.m., the final data transmission was made from the cockpit. At some point, that system shut down. 14 minutes later at 1:21, the transponder, which sends the location of the 777, also turned off. One source told us it was a systematic shutdown. The assumption that someone with flying experience didn't want this jet to communicate with the outside world. Our sources tell us one feature that apparently cannot be manually turned off is a ping feature, which is part of a data health system for the aircraft. If the plane had disintegrated during flight or suffered a catastrophic failure, it's expected all three signals, the pings, the data messages, and the transponder, would stop at the same time. In the case of Malaysia Air Flight, the ping continued hourly, our sources say, for 4 hours after the flight disappeared off radar. That ping may not tell us where the plane actually is, but at 600 miles an hour, it could be 2,400 miles from Malaysia, which is why the investigation is expanding into the Indian Ocean this morning with U.S. vessels moving in that direction.
And George, this is a very big ocean, and it's even deeper than some of the places that we found the wreckage from the Air France accident several years ago.
And we should emphasize right now this idea that it was a deliberate act, potentially sabotage, the leading theory, but not the only theory.
Absolutely. This is a possibility there was still a fire, could have been some cargo problems, could be that the pilots were lack of oxygen, had hypoxia, and actually passed out. This is the leading theory. This is what the Americans have found out so far, and now we're talking about this entire part of the Indian Ocean, which, as I mentioned, is very deep. They think that flight path, that they got one ping over here, kind of leads them over into this area and into the Indian Ocean.
That, of course, is it's the latest, pretty much, on that missing jetliner, the Malaysian airline Flight 370, which originated in Kuala Lumpur and was destined for Beijing and never made it there. Good Friday evening, everybody. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out and chilling out with me. I believe we are done with the chilling part here in St. Louis, at least for a while. Let's hope so. It's kind of nice. It's a nice change for us. It's a little different. We're getting used to it. But, you know, it's a nice change, and I think we can get used to it. But hope everyone is well this evening. TGIF, for the love of all things holy. And we are loaded for bear tonight. We're jam-packed. There is a whole bunch going on. You know, this is the topic of the week. This is the main conversation, I think, for just about everybody this week, is this missing plane. And it seems like such an oxymoron of a statement. You know, you lose your comb, you lose your car keys. How do you lose a plane? How do you lose a friggin' jet plane? There are, you know, the conspiracy theorists are having a heyday with this. And what I have here, the latest, that was from Good Morning America this morning on ABC. The latest right now that they are saying is that, of course, they believe that the transponder device, there were two different tracking devices, like the report from ABC News just said, that were turned off within 14 minutes of it. They were separately turned off. There was a 14-minute span of time there in between the turning off of these two tracking devices, the transponder. And by all accounts, but, you know, I think we've all seen a bazillion, you know, pilots, former pilots, aviation experts, military people, ex-military people, you name it, have all been on the airwaves this week giving their take on this. And what they're all saying is that for this transponder and for these instruments to have been turned off, they're not going to just be turned off automatically. It's going to take a human being to turn these instruments off. And the latest right now is that, again, like the report said, that they have expanded the search area. And basically at this point, again, I really can't add a whole lot to that report. If you a jet that can go roughly 600 miles an hour with the amount of fuel on board that they had, you're talking an area, I believe I heard this evening, an area that is six times the size of the United States. It's such a vast area, and well, kind of one of the most interesting things about this is that the western portion of this area, of this search area, would take you into parts of Pakistan, and just you'd just be getting into the Middle East, and so I think that is one of the interesting things about it. Also, reports are saying that this plane, once all of the tracking devices were turned off, and again, they had to be turned off manually, they had to be turned off by somebody who knew what they were doing, that this plane flew another 4 to 5 hours with them not having any contact with the outside world, with no one being able to find them, being able to know where they are, not having any contact with them, and you know, like I said, the conspiracy theorists are, you know, going crazy. I mean, you can go on the internet and, man, oh, Manischewitz, the conspiracy theories that you will find here. I think, well, it's really not a conspiracy theory, but one of the things that is being floated about possibly by U.S. officials is that, I don't know how many people remember this incident. I believe they said it happened in 1999. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago. But if everyone remembers professional golfer Payne Stewart, he was kind of famous for, you know, he would be on the golf course and he would be dressed very traditionally in plaid knickers, and that was kind of his shtick. But he was on a jet that lost cabin pressure, and the plane automatically, I think it's been so long ago now since this happened, but the plane went into autopilot, and by the time that rescue planes came upon them and found them and and found out what was going on, that everybody on this plane, they had lost cabin pressure, and everyone went into hypoxia, which is loss of oxygen. And by the time they got to the plane, everybody was dead, and they had to just basically let it run out of gas and kind of calculate where it was going to crash land. But that is one of the theories being floated about right now. The foul play angle to this, like I've said, comes from the fact that these devices had to be turned off manually. I don't know. The words sabotage and hijacking have also been bandied about. I've heard there's also another thing here. A U.S. source familiar with the investigation said there was also discussion with the U.S. government that the plane's disappearance might have involved an act of piracy. So this story just it continues to get weirder and weirder and weirder. And you know, I heard somebody else also this evening say that this is going right now, at least for right now, that this is one of the most bizarre aviation mysteries since Amelia Earhart, practically. Again, how do you lose a jet plane? And if we're going to talk about terrorism, there's a few other things here before we talk about terrorism. One of the working theories now is that they believe this jet crashed over the ocean. They know that this plane went off its flight plan and took a sharp left turn. Like I said, it was headed to China. It was headed to Beijing from Kuala Lumpur. About an hour into the flight, took a very sharp left turn and was going back over Malaysia. And they have basically lost contact with them after that. And, you know, of course, one of the things that is one of the biggest things, I think that maybe, yeah, people are quick to mention the word terrorism because of the day and age that we live in. But, you know, the more I think about it, it's kind of, and, you know, everybody's going to throw out their conspiracy theorist conspiracy theory. So here I go, I guess, with mine. And what my thinking on this is that, you know, I think that one of the investigational tools, maybe, and there's people who know way more about this stuff than I do. That's why they're sitting out in the Indian Ocean on naval ships investigating this. But one of the things that I thought of is that I think that in this day and age, you have to think like a terrorist. Like I said, there's people with some pretty high security clearance and get paid a whole lot more money than I do for making a living thinking like a terrorist. And when I say that, what I mean is that if you think about all of the things, all of the atrocities, you know, even prior to 9/11, all of the things that terrorists have taken credit for, everything that they have done, their whole intent after each incident is for the next incident to be bigger and better and more spectacular and usually bloodier than the last one. And so the last big spectacular thing that they managed to pull off was 9/11. And of course we know now, you know, that was years in the planning and years in the making. So after 9/11, how do they top that? That's got to be, if you're a terrorist and you're sitting in on your terrorist meeting, isn't that one of the topics that comes up? How do we top 9/11? Well, how would you top 9/11? Would you have some people who are trained to fly a 777 jet airliner and with 239 people on board and know about the technology and have the capacity to fly that plane somewhere where it goes totally off military and civilian radar and goes completely as if it's vanished off the face of the earth? You fly it somewhere to a secret location. And here's the kicker with that is that once you have that plane in an unidentified location, 239 people on board this plane who are from 14 different countries, that's a lot of ransom money. Now, I know that there has been no talk of kidnapping or ransom. There have been no demands made by any group thus far. We're only a week into this, and, you know, who knows? That may be forthcoming. Another thing that I heard about this morning was that on board this plane, now I heard that there are only three Americans that are on board this plane. The majority of the passengers on the plane are Chinese, but there is a defense contracting company by the name of Freescale. And what Freescale does is they do a lot of spy stuff, basically. They contract in military equipment. They contract in missile defense systems, tracking devices, and cyber military type things like that. And there were the word on the street is that there were 20 employees from this company with obviously very high security clearance levels, 20 employees of this Freescale company on that plane. And I think one of the million-dollar questions tonight has to be, why were so many employees from this one company on this one plane? If they had to transport these people someplace, why couldn't they have scattered them, you know, over five or six different flights? Why were they all on this same plane? So that's a little, is it a coincidence? Is it not? Who knows at this point? There's so much that we don't know yet about this. Like I said, the conspiracy theorists are having a heyday. And there was also some talk, too, that there was a lot of their altitude was going very sharply up and down because they were still able, just by mechanical data being transmitted, that they were able to tell some of these things, even though they didn't know where the plane was or where the plane was going, that they were able to determine some of these mechanical things like altitude. I don't know how cooperative the Malaysian government has been through all of this. God knows they have help from every corner of the world tonight trying to find these people and to find this plane and to find out what happened. And, I think to go along with the bazillions of other theories is that, I'm not too sure. I'm not quite sure just how cooperative the Malaysian government is being right now with our own government or with anyone else's. Maybe that's a premature accusation. There are a lot of people saying that the Malaysian government is really, really in over their head with this. It's an unexpected thing, and any government would be really hard pressed to, I think even our own government in its incompetence right now, you put your best and your brightest on a situation like this, and thoughts and prayers and hope that you can bring these people home to their families and to their loved ones, anyway, that is my theory here. I'm going to take a phone call here, I believe, if I can do this right. I'm going to take a phone call here. Hi, you're on the air. You're on with you're on Conservative Cauldron Radio. Hi. Is this Hi, Joe?
This is this.
Hi,
this,
how this are
this.
You?
I am good. How are you?
Hi. Oh, I'm hanging in there. We're talking about what everybody else is talking about, I guess, So what's going on?
The missing plane, yeah. I heard about that. I heard you talking about it. I figured I'd give you a ring, that's all.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm glad you're listening. Thanks a lot. That's really cool. That's good. So what do you think about it? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's kind of interesting that they haven't found any kind of wreckage at all if it went down.
I think so too. I'm not convinced that it's crashed. I'm not convinced that it's crashed yet.
That's it. Nobody really knows anything yet, the whole thing. And it's just like, it's a pretty large plane. And, they're talking about the decompressions and all that kind of stuff. Well, You know, knowing what I know about decompression, that's a large plane, and for something to happen catastrophic, you have to lose a whole door, something
I
like that.
I would think, yeah.
That
little plane that Payne Stewart was on, that was like a little, I mean, it wasn't like a little puddle jumper or anything, but it was kind of like a private jet size kind of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's a much smaller aircraft, and that was a slow decompression where, unfortunately, they didn't pay attention to their cabin altimeter, and it caught up, and they were all just kind of went to sleepy bye-bye.
What a way to go, you know.
They just went to sleep. Seriously.
Yeah,
they were asleep.
After
so much time, then you start to have some problems with it. But they just went to sleep. It's really old.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I think you got to think like a terrorist, you know. I mean, how are you going to top 9/11? How are you going to top flying planes into buildings, you know?
Well, it's kind of crazy that nobody's taking any credit for it. And that's what they're there for.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
you would think if you got a plane full of 240 people from 14 different countries, aren't you thinking, hey, that could be a lot of ransom money? I mean, you know, terrorists got to make a buck like everybody else, right?
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, that's a lot of people to control at one time.
That's true.
I'm sure not every one of them agreed to go along with whatever demands were going to be made upon them.
It's still all
conjecture and everything. You know, if they found some records, although I'd rather have it somehow, it's sitting on a field somewhere. Intact, and they're just kind of waving it. People go, "Hey, here we are!"
Yeah,
you know?
come get us, please.
Yeah, that would be the greatest thing to happen here, but
I
don't think that's going to happen. Or something bad has happened, and it's just a matter of what it is.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so too. Wow.
But
well,
I just want to
cool.
be ranked.
Great! I'm so glad you did. Thanks so much, Joe. Thanks for calling in.
Not a problem, Beck.
Okay. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, cool.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, anyway, I think that was, by the way, that was one of my fellow News Ninja 2012 buddies, Joe. Hey, Joe. Isn't that the name of the song? Anyway. So, shout out to all of my News Ninja 2012 buddies. But I think we are going to be hearing a whole lot more about this plane, and hopefully that the families of these people will have some closure, and that we can find out what's happened to them very soon. But going back a little further, earlier last weekend, I guess, was CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's kind of the Super Bowl for all of us conservative nerds every year. I was not fortunate enough to attend, although I do have some friends who were fortunate enough to attend, and I was very jealous of them. But sounded like they all had a great time. They met a lot of people, and a couple of interesting things about CPAC. Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, last year he was not invited to CPAC, and I think it had a lot to do with the whole, I think everybody remembers right in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy and President Obama showed up to look at the wreckage and for some photo ops, and Chris Christie did a lot of man-hugging on President Obama, and I think a lot of conservatives really, it kind of they were miffed a little bit by that, and Governor Christie's invite to CPAC last year kind of got lost in the mail, but apparently he's redeemed himself because he got a standing ovation this year. And, he's been talked about as one of the front runners in 2016. I don't know. I think it's still so early to tell about that. Rand Paul actually won the straw poll for 2016 this year, and he really kind of ran away with the whole deal. He got about 35% of the votes of everybody who voted, and the next person I think that was even close to him was Ted Cruz, and he had 11%. So, you know, it is not a it's not a cut and dry deal, you know, that Chris Christie's going to get the nomination. And, you know, when you pair a lot of these people up with Hillary Clinton, ooh, it's scary. It's scary. But that was one of the interesting things that went on there. There were a lot of speakers who really have been kind of, I don't know, kind of saying what I've been saying all along is that, you know, we've, and it sounds simplistic, but we've just got to be more inclusive. We've got to be more inclusive, and we've got to get the mainstream media is not going to do it for us. In fact, they're going to do just the opposite. So we have to find a way to get out there and get the message out to people that they're lying, that we are a big tent party and that we are inclusive. And there's a lot of Senator Mike Lee in his speech at CPAC was basically telling people that very thing is one of the quotes from him was that we as conservatives have got to be far more engaged in finding converts than discarding heretics. You know, everybody's definition of heretics is different when it comes to establishment conservatives versus Tea Party conservatives. But anyway, there's here's a couple of highlights here from last weekend.
Last fall, Jay Leno said, so President Obama called me. He said, Jay, if you like your job, you can keep it.
The way the left tells it, the Republican Party is in this big, massive civil war. There's infighting, conflict, backbiting, discord. Look, I'm Irish. That's my idea of a family reunion.
No matter what you do, no matter how nice you are, no matter how soft you are, no matter how many times you say, rip down the fence and let everybody in, you're not going to get the votes. So with immigration, you better be smart and you better be tough, and they're taking your jobs, and you better be careful. You better be careful.
We don't need, Mr. President, your opinion on what income inequality is. We don't have an income inequality problem. We have an opportunity inequality problem in this country because government's trying to control the private market.
I ask you, all of you here today, do you trust this government to protect you? We are on our own. That is a certainty.
Four Americans were murdered at Benghazi, and our government lied to us as to what happened. With all due respect to Hillary Clinton, it does make a difference why they died and who did it.
Get out of the healthcare business. Get out of the education business. Stop hammering industry. Let the sleeping giant of American enterprise create prosperity again. My fellow conservatives, the future of this nation is upon you.
The NSA monitors your every phone call. If you have a cell phone, you are under surveillance. I believe what you do on your cell phone is none of their damn business.
With so many young people, or as you're known by the folks across the river, Obamacare suckers. Yep, you are the ones, right? You're the ones who'll pay the bills in our brave new world. They forgot that part, didn't they, when they said that you were the change that you were waiting for. Turns out you have the change that they were waiting for. You have the change. You have the fives, the tens, and the twenties. And along the way, hope and change. Yes, we can. It became, no, you can't. No, you can't log on to the website. No, you can't keep your health care. No, you can't make a phone call without Michelle Obama knowing. This is the third time this week you've dialed Pizza Hut delivery. I do not like this. Uncle Sam, I do not like his healthcare scam.
So that was just a few of the highlights from CPAC 2014, which took place last weekend. And, you know, we've got some great people who are we've got some fresh faces, and we've got some faces that need to go. And, you know, before I go to a break, here's just a little bit of, well, the intellectual powerhouses that we are up against, and we're really going to have to step up our game, and we're really going to have to get some serious, you know, exceptional people to throw their hat in the ring and get into the running for the presidency in 2016.
Woman from Texas.
I thank the chairman very much, and frankly, maybe I should offer a good thanks to the distinguished members of the majority, the Republicans, my chairman, and others, for giving us an opportunity to have a deliberative constitutional discussion that reinforces the sanctity of this nation and how well it is that we have lasted some 400 years operating under a constitution that clearly defines what is constitutional and what is not. The Enforcement Act is not constitutional, but it gives us an opportunity to raise these issues. That's what freedom is. That's what the opportunity of democracy is all about. So
that's what we're up against, people. Constitutional scholar Sheila Jackson Lee. She is the gift that keeps on giving. And, you know, like I said, if that's who we're up against, look alive, people. Look very alive. I'm Becky Noble. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron. I'm going to take a break. I'll be back in a second. Thanks for listening. We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble, TGIF. Thanks for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. We are jam-packed tonight. Of course, we're talking about what everybody else is talking about, that missing jet plane over in Asia and Malaysia. And that's only going to continue to, I don't know, I think that's going to get more weird before it gets less weird. But we had that constitutional scholar, Sheila Jackson Lee, talking about our 400-year-old Constitution. Yes, people, did you know that the Constitution was 400 years old? If you didn't know that, what's wrong with you? What is the matter with you? But also this week, everyone's favorite IRS employee, Lois Lerner, well, apparently Lois has a lot to say in her emails to people. But, well, when she comes before the House Oversight Committee, she kind of dummies up and she doesn't have a whole lot to say because, once again this week, Lois Lerner pleaded the fifth, like I said, in front of the House Oversight Committee, looking into her her zany hijinks over there at the IRS and her assisting in the investigation and crackdown of conservative groups over there at the IRS. She has been accused of obstructing the Oversight Committee's investigation and misleading Congress as well. She is quite a piece of work, Ms. Lerner. It says here some emails in this final report from this committee show that she had discussed launching a project to ensure that nonprofit advocacy groups, easy for me to say, complied with tax law, but they provided no evidence of explicit directions to focus on conservative organizations. Well, that may be, but we already know that we've seen an email that went out to several other people where she was calling the Tea Party, quote, situation was dangerous. And so, I mean, we already know those things. Another key conclusion from this report says that the former acting IRS commissioner, Daniel Werfel, never interviewed Lerner during an internal review that turned up no proof of intentional wrongdoing or political motivations behind the agency's targeting efforts. Well, but even if he didn't interview her, we already knew that you know, there was some question about what was going on here at the IRS and their targeting of conservative groups, so that it wasn't just a bunch of rogue employees in Cincinnati with nothing else better to do. It also revealed emails showing that Lerner received confidential taxpayer information on a non-IRS computer system and personal email account. Her willingness to handle this information on a non-official email account highlights her disregard for confidential taxpayer information. It goes on, of course, her lawyer, William Taylor, you know, denies all the accusations. And, of course, once again, she pleaded the Fifth Amendment, which you know, is her right. But again, I think the question that everybody is asking here is, do people who plead the Fifth Amendment, do they really have nothing to hide? If you are a completely innocent person and you have no fear of incriminating yourself, do you have need of the Fifth Amendment? Yes, it's there for at your disposal to use, but if you have nothing to hide, do you have use for it? And but another little interesting tidbit, Lois Lerner has been a busy bee, let me tell you what. There was another little tidbit that came out this week, and I don't know, of course, it probably did not get a whole lot of attention because, well, it was about Lois Lerner and the IRS targeting conservative groups, and who else but new media is going to talk about that because nobody else is going to talk about it. And this comes to us from our buddy, the Gateway Pundit, and, well, nobody probably – there's not a lot of people that know about this, but way back in 1996 – there was a guy named Al Salvi, and he was running for Congress, I believe, in Illinois. And at the time, in 1996, Lois Lerner, what was her title here? She was head of the Enforcement Division of the Federal Elections Commission, the FEC. That year, Al Salvi was the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate from Illinois. And his Democrat opponent during that election was Senator Dick Durbin. Well, Al had a little message from someone at the Federal Election Commission. And the message that he got was that he was, I believe he was, during the final weeks of the campaign, Salvi loaned himself over $1 million to buy ads in the Chicago media market. This in turn prompted the Democrat Party's campaign arm to file complaints with the FEC, and in kind the FEC filed charges against Al Salvi about this. And someone at the FEC told him that, well, that they wanted to give him a quid pro quo, I believe is the I probably can't say it because it's late, but you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, basically. And what they said was that if you will promise that you will never run for office again, we'll drop this case. We'll drop all the charges against you. Can anybody guess who Al Salvi might have gotten that little deal from? Well, Al Salvi's buddy, the person offered him that little tit-for-tat deal was none other than our favorite IRS employee, Lois Lerner. So Lois has been very busy for quite a number of years, going all the way back to 1996, and now we know how much and for how long she has loved conservatives and conservative organizations. So there is that. And you know, I know I'm kind of bouncing around here tonight, but, you know, I just got so much to get in, and I want to get it all in. But we also had this election in Florida this week. Republican David Jolly defeated Democrat Alex Sink in a special congressional election in Florida District 13. And basically where that is Pinellas County, Florida, which includes Tampa, it includes Clearwater. It's in that area there. And, you know, a lot of people were saying the Democrats poured a ton of money into this campaign. And Alex Sink had originally, I believe, she ran against Rick Scott for governor last time around and, of course, lost to him. But so she has been around. And it was a close race. And but a lot of people are saying that this was really kind of the first referendum of 2014 on Obamacare, and that there are a lot of political pundits who are saying that this may be the way for Democrats this year, that this may be the shape of things to come, basically this year for them. And one of the most surprising things, the surprises that people who actually came out and might be conceding that there might be some huge losses for Democrats this year was Mr. Tingles himself, Chris Matthews. And, you know, Chris has had such a man crush on President Obama for so long, and the fact that they may have to break up now, I think, is just – it's really bumming him out.
Results.
Yeah, I looked, Joe, at the Wall Street Journal dichotomy between Democrats and Republicans that came out yesterday, and I thought it was powerful. The Democrats are in a kind of a conciliatory soft mood. They want to negotiate. They want to make deals across the aisles. They want to fix Obamacare. On the Republican side, it's much harder. You know, they want to get rid of Obamacare, plain and simple, and they don't particularly want to negotiate so much. They are in a fast, hard and fast position. So you see passion on one side, a hard positioning on one side, the other side unsure of itself. So you know who's going to vote, the ones that are sure of themselves. They want to get back to Christian values, and they want to get back to the elements of their beliefs, which is a kind of a base voting pattern. I think Chuck said this the other day, and it's kind of trying to referee this thing, and I thought it was pretty smart. If you're a Democrat and you want to hold on to something of what you have, you have to change the question from how do you feel, which is lousy, and we're in the blues. The Republicans are very good at continuing that mood in the country. But You've got to change it to what side are you on, and you've got to change it to a very deafening, almost a loud appreciation of what the Republicans say. If they say they're going after entitlements, you tell the voters they're going after Social Security and Medicare. If they're getting tough on voter suppression, things like that, you say they're coming after you if you're a minority. If they put in their platform or say they're against abortion, you say they're coming after abortion rights. You've got to get out there and put a very strong, bold picture of what the Republicans would like to do and say that's what they're going to do. You've got to get very tough. And that way you can probably have a chance of not taking a big loss in the House. But even then, given the turnout you talk about being low this time, it's going to be very hard to hold the Senate. I think the Senate goes. I think we heard from the ghost of Christmas future this week, which is they're going to lose the Senate. So they better change the name of this game. And that means Steve Israel's got to do it. And Michael Bennett's got to do it in the Senate side. They've got to change the game to what side are you on and expect the worst from the Republicans. You've got to get really tough to win this.
Yeah.
You know, I think somebody who is so, you know, who is so, you know, wedded to Democrat and to liberal ideology, for him to actually, you know, really come out loud, say, yeah, I really think that the Democrats are going to lose the Senate. But what I thought was so funny about this clip was that, I mean, he's basically giving Joe Scarborough, you know, campaign strategy for the Democrats, and you know, and he's saying this on morning TV in front of how many millions of people, and it's just, you know, here's what they're going to say, and here's what we got to do to counteract it, and that's just, I think he gets so passionate and gets so involved about what he's saying because he so believes it that I don't think, well, I think we already know that he doesn't have a filter, but. You know, he just gets so involved in what he's saying that he doesn't realize what's coming out of his mouth. And like I said, we've known that for a while that Chris Matthews lacks a filter in a lot of cases. But you know, for somebody like him to be saying that, I think is really I think that's really significant because you know they're not going to show you their hand. They're not going to show you their cards all the time. They're going to be confident. And they're going to say, "Oh no, we're going to run on Obamacare, and everybody's going to think it's great, and we're going to win the House back. We're going to get the Senate, and everything's going to be great." But really, I think I would argue that in those dark, smoke filled rooms full of dark smoke filled Democrats, that they're sweating. They're sweating and they're panicking, and because they can. They can trot Harry Reid out to talk about how all the people who have lost their insurance plans, they can trot Harry Reid out all day long, you know. But and he can call all of those people's liars 100 times a day. But it's not going to change the fact that those people aren't lying. Those people are going through what they're going through, and they know why they're going through it. And so. Like I said, I think it's really significant for somebody like him because you're not going to hear it all the time. You're going to hear a Chris Matthews say something that honest very rarely. And when you do, you know, it's they're kind of letting their guard down and letting you know what they really think. But you know, while we're on the subject of liberal ideology, well, we also found out earlier this week, you know how little kids have imaginary friends. Well, Nancy Pelosi has an imaginary friend. I don't know if that's because she doesn't have very many of her own. You know, I don't know. She may have some friendship issues. But she was speaking in front of a group in California, I believe, which, you know, do the math on that one. But she was telling the group about her imaginary friend.
Employment insurance. I asked a Republican friend why his party remained so opposed to extending the vital lifelines for struggling families and really hungry children. This colleague's response was telling in its blunt nature, and it's stunning in its honesty. What he said was, to the Republican caucus, these people you're talking about are invisible. And the Republican caucus is indifferent to them, invisible and indifferent. This is just plain wrong. That is not the leadership the American people deserve, and it is up to us to demonstrate clearly how Democrats are different, that no American is invisible to us, and we will never be indifferent to their needs. We know and care about the needs of the American people.
Okay, a couple of things about that. You know, again, Nancy Pelosi, she's like Sheila Jackson Lee. She's the gift that keeps on giving. What can you say? But when she says that this is it's stunning in its honesty. You know, first of all, this has got to be right. It's got to be right after, right underneath. If you like your health plan, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep him. It's right below that. For her to be saying, well, first of all, raise your hands, kids. How many people think that Nancy Pelosi has Republican friends? First of all, I'm calling BS on that one. I don't think Nancy Pelosi has any Republican friends. I think that people in Congress probably have to be nice to Nancy Pelosi because, let's face it, we all have coworkers that we don't like, but we have to work with them, so we have to smile at them and be nice to them. That's who I think Nancy Pelosi's Republican friends are. And second of all, for her to say how stunning something is in its honesty, you know, I don't know that Nancy Pelosi would know any form of honesty anymore if it crawled up her leg and bit her, because, you know, we can cite example after example, you know, of the whoppers that she tells, and, you know, and the biggest thing about this too, the biggest thing about this quote is that she will not come out and name who this person is. You know, if there really and truly is a Republican who is saying these things to Nancy Pelosi, wouldn't you think that one of the first things that she would do was jump up and down on a table and give this person's name out? Why is she protecting this person? You know, isn't her role as a Democrat and a leader in the Democratic, isn't it her role to defeat Republicans? So you would think, because her role to defeat Republicans, wouldn't she think that maybe, hey, if I name this person, that's going to give us an edge, and that's going to send Republicans down to defeat? So why is she protecting this person if this person even exists? That's what I want to know. And, you know, I think also, too, the most important thing is that as Republicans, we want to know who this person is. So we can take them in a room by themselves and shake them until their eyes rattle and say, what are you doing? What the hell were you thinking telling Nancy Pelosi something like this? So I think that anybody who hears this and hears Nancy Pelosi talking about her imaginary Republican friend has got to call BS on it. I mean, there's just, you know, who believes that, you know? So, you know, I'm sure that Nancy's going to trot not just her imaginary Republican friend out. You know, I'm sure she has imaginary black friends. Well, she probably doesn't have any imaginary gay friends. She lives in San Francisco. So I'm sure she does have gay friends, her imaginary black friends, her imaginary Latino friends. You know, maybe she has some other imaginary women friends. You know, she has a lot of imaginary friends. So, and that seems to be kind of a Democrat trait. Wasn't there somebody a while back that had all sorts of imaginary friends? Wasn't it? It was Al Gore, wasn't it? Thinking maybe it was Al Gore. Maybe Al Gore's imaginary friends are just tired of hanging out with him because he blew the whole global warming thing, and now his imaginary friends are looking for a new friend. Who knows? But the other thing I wanted to get to this week, and I wrote about it over at conservativecauldron.blogspot.com, where it all started, was this whole thing about banning the word bossy. And for those of you who haven't heard this PSA, let's see, Beyonce is in it. What's her name? Jane Lynch from Glee. Who's the chick that's the – I can say chick. I'm a chick. The woman who is the CEO at Facebook. Well, here you go.
This is Van Bossy, take one.
Pushy.
Stubborn.
Stubborn.
Pushy.
Pushy.
Stubborn.
Stubborn.
Bossy.
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 When I was growing up, I was called bossy.
I think the word bossy is just a swasher.
Being labeled something matters. By middle school,
girls are less interested in leadership than boys.
And that's because they worry about being called bossy.
We need to tell them it's okay to be ambitious.
We need to help them lean in.
Words matter.
Let's just ban the word bossy.
And encourage girls to lead.
To be strong,
and be ambitious.
Listen to your own voice.
There are no limits.
Dare to be you.
You can change the world.
Let Van Bossy
be brave. Be you.
Van Bossy.
Join us to Van Bossy.
I'm not bossy. I'm the boss.
Encourage girls to lead. Take the pledge at vanbossy.com.
Okay, you know, I've heard a lot of people say this week that they think this whole bossy thing is kind of silly. And, you know, for the most part, it is. But first of all, the first person that you see, even, you know, wait a minute, even before that, the first person that I'm really surprised that has jumped on this bandwagon was Condoleezza Rice. I was really, really disappointed by that. But the first person you see in this PSA ad is Beyonce. And the fact that they talk about how this word is demeaning for women and it does not incite confidence and high self-esteem in women and girls. Okay, first of all, let's see, this is 24. So about 6 years ago, there was a woman running for vice president named Sarah Palin, who got called names that I can't repeat here, and you never heard one word from any of these chicks. So apparently, all of those words that Bill Maher used and a lot of other people used on a woman, that was okay. And also, I've heard a lot of people point out, and I completely agree with it, that Beyonce is married to a guy who uses some words in his rap music that are extremely degrading and not very good words used in reference to women. And apparently that's not a problem for them either. You're going to hear crickets on that too. And I also thought of something else too, is that, you know, there are a lot of women in the Tea Party. I happen to be, I consider myself a Tea Party member. There are a lot of women in the Tea Party. So when people started using the word teabagger in regards to the Tea Party, doesn't that mean if there are a lot of women in the Tea Party that you're using that word, you're using that word teabagger in reference to women? And apparently that was okay too. But now all of a sudden using the word bossy is somehow degrading and demeaning. Like I said over at Conservative Cauldron blog, we have worked very long and very hard to become the boss and to get that corner office. And, you know, they say in this PSA that words mean things. Yeah, words mean things. Words like the words that you use to describe Sarah Palin and words that you use to describe female Tea Party members. Yeah, those words matter. And I don't think a word like this, instead of banning it, first of all, you know, that's a topic for a whole other show, is banning words. Instead of banning this word, why don't we take back the meaning of it and give it a positive meaning and give it some positive mentality? That we're able to do that, and that's a good thing to do. Banning words is not very good at all. Start banning words, you know, Where does it end? Where do you stop banning the words? If you're going to ban a silly little word like bossy, what comes next? I as a writer and a blogger, I'm not into banning words. So instead of banning the words, let's give those words new meaning. But you know, so apparently some words for some women are okay, and you know, I guess bossy for liberal women is, you know, not so much okay. But you know, we may hear some more about that, you know, in the coming weeks too. But that's about it for me. I want to thank everybody for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. I know next we're going to keep hearing more, like I said, on the whole Malaysian airline flight 370. We're going to hear a lot more about that because, like I said, I think it's going to get more weird before it gets less weird. But please, everybody, look me up on facebook.com/BeckyNoble. Please go to conservativecauldron.blogspot.com. I am on Twitter at PatriotWitch. Go to examiner.com. And also, please check out News Ninja 2012. not just me, but all of my News Ninja 2012 buddies are there. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and I will see you next time.